Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
With us now is Sean O'Brien to discuss his commitment for one of the nation's largest unions, the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, to mount a nationwide effort to organize Amazon's delivery workers, declaring that the multi-million-dollar behemoth is an existential threat to workers everywhere.
O'Brien, who is running to become president of the IBT, will also talk about building genuine worker power and shop floor militancy, in addition to solidarity across unions and with community to put the movement back into the labor movement. Sean O'Brien, we have a society that denigrates the working class. So why don't we start by the kind of work that you do? Paint a picture for us so that we can appreciate the work that our brother and sister Teamsters do.
First and foremost, we have proven, especially over the last 18 months, how essential that the Teamsters are in the many different industries we represent, whether it's e-commerce with UPS, DHL, and other delivery companies, freight companies, grocery warehouse, grocery deliveries, rubbish, trash, a lot of healthcare workers providing goods and services to many different facets during the pandemic. What we do every single day, the Teamsters keep America moving. You know, our slogan back in the day was ship by truck, right? And thankfully, that's evolved where we ship by truck, rail, airplane, and maritimes. Anything someone buys or any product or any food consumed, it's usually handled and or delivered by a Teamster. Any trash pickup, for the most part, at some point is handled by Teamsters. So, you know, we're very essential in the day-to-day stuff. Me personally, I grew up a fourth-generation Teamster out of Boston. And luckily, I was able to grow up around the dinner table and learn core values of why the union's so important, why it's so important to protect, preserve, and improve working conditions, but more importantly, giving back to an organization that has given you everything in your entire life. That's everything we do in a nutshell, if I covered it.
You know, the core values, because once again, while individual workers are certainly not valued for the value they create for every single part of this society, there's the issue of unions are constantly denigrated. Talk a little about the core values that you see as the kind of hallmark and heart of your positioning and understanding of what the Teamsters Union should be about and what you bring to that understanding for other workers, because after all, you are running for national president of the Teamsters Union.
Core values is great. I think the one thing that we have to be cutting edge, we have to not be afraid to look at non-traditional industries, but also respect and recognize how important the traditional industries the Teamsters have represented for over 118, 120 years. And the struggle for us, I think moving forward, as I mentioned earlier, is that, you know, I'm an anomaly. You know, I've got a generational connection to the labor movement, more specifically to the Teamsters Union. I've understand and I've been able to witness firsthand the sacrifices that, you know, workers have made over the last 40 or 50 years. And those sacrifices usually come in the way of wages so that we can ensure that there are pensions, defined benefits, like pensions, where people can retire, maintain their current lifestyle, and also the same with affordable or free health care. We mandate these employers through collective bargaining, through our strength, through our influence, to provide such great benefits, but also, more importantly, provide respect for the workers that make them a success. What the disconnect is going to be in the struggle moving forward is, you know, that generational connection of second, third, and fourth people coming into the same industries that their moms or dads worked in, it's slowly diminishing, and it's now more so now than ever. It's more important to make sure that there's an education program where we embrace this next generation of workers who may have not have known that there was a 100-day strike somewhere to ensure that pensions were protected. And that 100-day strike may have resulted in 30 or 40 years of pensions being respected by employers and not taking that fight on, and or why it's important to make certain that, you know, we educate them that, you know, 401ks, probably with their mother and father or their siblings that depend upon for retirement, aren't the answer to retirement for working people. So if we're not educating the members on how important it is, but more importantly, eloquently explaining how these conditions such as pensions and health care were achieved, most of it was achieved by sacrifice. And that sacrifice may have come in the way of sacrificing wages so that we can fund a better health care program, or sacrificing a strike that went on for a long period of time to achieve long-term goals. So a lot of times I'll tell people, if we are not embracing these next generation, there is not going to be a fifth, sixth, or seventh generation of the Teamsters Union. Slowly but surely, we're going to be putting ourselves out of business. Those are the core values, but also respecting industries, but also embracing change. And as leaders who have long-term connections to the unions, we need to put our egos aside and say, look, although I may not agree with the thought process, but there are always better ideas. There's always inclusiveness. There's always some sort of better way to do things. And I think this new generation is going to be just as valuable to us as we are to them by meshing both the past with the future. So I'm excited about it. It's going to be a lot of work. It's going to be a lot of commitment. But this is something that's necessary. And if we don't do that, we've failed the organization. The other thing I always tell people is that we always want to leave our situation better than we found it. And if we leave an international union, a local union, or regional unions that much stronger, that much secure financially, but more importantly empowered, then we've done our job. We're running under the motto of Teamsters United, but we're also affiliated with TDU, Teamsters for a Democratic Union. We've meshed in other organizations. We've actually formed this coalition of different views, different affiliations, different backgrounds, and difference of opinions in the Teamsters to come up with this, which I think is the greatest team ever to take back our union, all those different opinions, all those different thought processes. So we're running as a coalition group under the Teamsters United brand.
Now, you're running to reform the union. You're as a critique of the Hoffer administration, even though Hoffer isn't running this time, his designated person is. What would you do as president of the union?
Well, first off, direction? I mean, we've got to restore the power. The one thing we've done over the last 3 years since Fred and I have, and Fred's been a great partner, by the way, Fred and I have formed this team. The first and foremost, we've got to unify this union once and for all. You know, we can't exclude people that affiliated with a certain group, whether it's Teamsters United, TDU, and or former, you know, Hoffa supporters. You know, you look at this organization that's given you everything in your life, and it should be the most powerful union in North America. And we were losing clout. We were negotiating substandard national agreements like UPS. We were giving companies concessions. We weren't politically active. If we were politically active, we weren't getting any return on our investment. And that return on our investment is based upon what our members' needs are. What we're going to do, because it's not about one person. It's about a team. It's about the rank and file members. What we're going to do is we're going to unite this union. Even our opponents who, at the end of the day, when the election's over, you know, we've got to repair these relationships. We've got to repair any type of division. Secondly, we're going to make sure that we actually put together an organizing department that's going to be utilized to organize workers, not to utilize it as a political umbrella or that's shot into an adversarial area to find out what that local union is doing. I mean, far too long, the IBT has used the organizing department not to organize new members, but to do opposition research. That ends when we take over. We're going to actually revamp the organizing department. We're going to put organizers in place that are from industries, whether it's traditional industries or non-traditional industries, in areas where they work in the communities where they live. So that's important. The third thing we're going to do is we're going to have an educational component. We're going to make sure that we are arming and educating this next generation of workers. This next generation, this election is not about a five-year term or a 10-year term. It's about setting this union up that's been run for, you know, with the attitude of path of least resistance for the last 20 years. We've got to clean up a lot of 20-year complacency. But more importantly, we've got to engage this next generation who will be taking over this union at some point in time so that they are armed to take on corporate America. They're armed to organize the unorganized. They are going to assert their political power behind politicians that are going to support labor's agenda. We want to bring political strength back. We want to make sure that when we're giving money to politicians and they're making all these promises, that they're held accountable. We are going to hold their feet to the fire. We are going to be the most influential union in the entire country, I believe, under the Oz 2025 team.
the question of organizing, to look at one of the most significant issues of organizing thousands and thousands of UPS workers, part of the Teamsters Union. Many of the workers were delivering. Tell me, how many UPS workers are actually members of the Teamsters?
That's probably about 275,000.
So it's a huge number. And
it's
one
the
of the
biggest,
reasons
it's the largest,
that I'm
collective bargaining agreement in the entire country.
Of course, the great hope was that at the warehouses and the delivery processes that Amazon, who's still the largest employer in this country, indeed in the world, that they had been using and should be using more and more UPS drivers. But now they are beginning the process of going towards independent or subcontracting or certainly non-union drivers. And I wonder if you can talk about the import of that situation.
First and foremost, Amazon is going to be and has been our most formidable opponent for the last decade. It's ironic, or maybe a coincidence, but you know, the IBT and my opponent, who is the warehouse director, decided 6 months ago to finally put a plan together to organize Amazon. I can speak to what we've been doing on a local level and on a New England-wide area level to organize the warehouse workers in Amazon. But I think more importantly, we need to have a plan in place and a strategy to organize Amazon. We haven't done that over the last 10 years. And 6 months prior to this election, all of a sudden there's a plan in place. And, you know, I support whoever is going to try and organize Amazon, and it's going to be the Teamsters Union under our leadership. But even right now, I'll support a program that's actually going to work. But if it's going to be a political stunt to show that Jim Hoffa's handpicked team is trying to organize workers, then we're not going to support it. That hasn't been the case yet, but still the jury's out. It's not just about package delivery. Amazon is in many, many different areas that we represent. They're in food distribution, delivery of that such food to these warehouses. I know they've got they own Whole Foods, and they've got many stakes and different ownerships and different distribution centers. So it's not just a package delivery. However, the only direct employees right now seem to be the warehouse workers, the part-timers, similar to what the UPS and DHL part-timers do, which, by the way, they get benefits as pension and health care, which Amazon's not getting. So that's where we have to focus on. The independent contractor model is a very difficult model, and this is where, you know, we're going to have to rely on political allies and influences that the Teamsters Union is going to need to forge, because at some point in time, there's got to be some sort of reform to organize an independent contractors, and that's going to come through legislation. I think California tried it with the Uber and the Lyfts of the world, and I think Massachusetts is on the verge of putting something together with a bunch of labor unions. But in the meantime, we have to have a real strategy that's going to organize these inside employees. These are some figures that I actually got from UPS when they gave presentations over the last year about what the threat Amazon means to them. UPS puts out 75,000 package cars per day in the United States. Amazon has a plan over the next several years to not only keep building distribution centers around the country, but to put out over 130,000 delivery vehicles. So, you know, that could be a major threat to our 270,000.
Well, Sean, so you're actually, if I may, it's my understanding that we're talking about roughly 1 million low-wage workers in core Teamster industries, from the warehousing to the package delivery, and if there isn't the organization and unionization, Amazon absolutely poses a real threat, some people would say existential threat, to good union jobs.
And it's not just going to affect Teamsters. I mean, it's going to affect, you know, many other industries that we don't even foresee. We don't even know what their plan is. You know, they may buy a railroad. I mean, for instance, they're in, you know, they are right now currently through the pandemic, no one could go to the movie theaters. So they do two things. They double down on their streaming video where they're shooting movies and TV series so everybody can enjoy it at home. But they're also out there buying these movie theaters that people aren't going to go to because it's a shell of a building, easily to transform into a sort center, usually located in close proximity to interstates and highways. but more importantly has a lot of land where they can stage and store trailers and load trucks and ship them out. So this is absolutely our biggest threat moving forward.
The issue of the delivery drivers that Amazon is using that don't actually work for Amazon. They work for small subcontractors who Amazon calls service providers. Talk a little bit about what's at stake for them, what the rate of pay is, those who are considered Amazon flex drivers, the name Amazon uses for self-employed personal vehicle drivers, just to give a sense of what the point of distinction is for people who are not the UPS drivers, who are not Teamster drivers, union drivers working for Amazon.
These independent contractors, to your point, who work for a third-party leasing arrangement, who are basically 1099 employees. They work for a subcontractor delivering packages where they have to lease the vehicle from Amazon, they have to wear the uniform Amazon provides, and they will get paid whatever Amazon dictates. Unlike the Teamsters contract, whether you're at DHL or UPS, where the average full-time driver at both locations between benefits and wages is making well over $100,000 per year. We've found through some of our research that these drivers don't get paid by the hour like UPS or DHL. They're not getting health care benefits, and they're certainly not getting pension benefits. They're getting 1099 at the end of the year. They're responsible for whatever benefit they can afford, and the repairs on vehicles after service failures, reimbursements, and stuff like that. Good thing about being a union service provider, whether it's UPS or DHL or even the Postal Service, you get paid by the hour, you get paid for every hour in service, you're getting full medical, and you're getting a full pension that you can retire on, unlike these independent contractors, which is valued well over $100,000 per year.
And what kind of resources are you willing to put into this campaign, both in terms of money and staff, and how would it involve community groups and other unions?
There's no doubt that Amazon and Jeff Bezos and whoever his successor is and will be is always going to have more money than any one of us, any organization. However, the one thing that we have is we have people that are willing to sacrifice with sweat equity, people that are willing to actually go out and boots on the ground. The one thing that we have to do that I think, and we've been doing it in Local 25, is we need to expose Amazon politically, because they come into these cities and towns, they promise them all kinds of jobs, they sell themselves as a great corporation that's all about the community, and we've found differently. We've been able to go around, and I'm talking specific Boston, surrounding cities and towns, where we're passing these resolutions before city and town governments, making certain they understand that there's got to be community standards upheld, community standards such as they're going to build a distribution center. It needs to be built with all organized labor, with the building trades included. If they're going to operate out of these facilities, they need to uphold community standards like our UPS part-timers that get full medical, that get pensions, that get annual wage increases, that get paid by the hour, that get vacation, sick time. All the stuff a collective bargaining agreement would benefit the workers of Amazon. So we've been able to do that politically. This is not going to be a traditional organizing drive where we stand out in front of the gates and talk to these folks and give them cards to sign up because they desire to be in the union. This has to be a plan that has to be executed nationwide. You know, it has to be a nationwide effort. But most importantly, it's got to expose Amazon. And at some point in time, I know that I'm very close with our Attorney General in Massachusetts, and she's the head of a task force looking into Amazon's wage and violations. And so the more public pressure we can put on this company, the more exposure on how disrespectful they are to their workers, it's going to add tremendous value. Financially, we're going to have to invest, putting programs on, putting organizers on. In 2001 or 2002, we did a special convention, and the motto was under the Hoffa administration was a nickel an hour for Teamster Power. That was to create a strike and defense fund. And that strike and defense fund was going to be, in the event we struck, we were able to make sure our members were paid, receive some sort of compensation, but also to defend against your biggest threat. Our biggest threat is Amazon. So we can use some of the $300 million to reinvest in organizing the Amazon work. We are financially secure in that aspect, and two reasons why. We don't strike employees that should be struck, and we, you know, settle for mediocrity. So that's why that fund has been building. But secondly, we have never utilized it, to my knowledge, to defend against our biggest threat, which would be Amazon. So that will change under our administration as well.
Sean O'Brien, many listeners, when they think of the Teamsters, they see hard-knuckle power as enormously strong and powerful, and call up some of the leadership of the days from the first Jimmy Hoffa to his son James Hoffa. But you're contesting the issue of the strength of the unions, and you're also talking about putting the rank and file back into building union movement. Ken very often says, he bemoans the fact, when are we going to put the movement back into the labor movement? So talk about where you think unions are at now and what needs to be done, in your opinion, to really strengthen the respect for the working class and the muscle of organized labor to win the rights and benefits and influence the politics of the society as the working class should.
You know, I always say that we get two options here. We can either be tough Teamster guys and gals and bang our hands on the table, or we can be smart Teamster guys and gals and find strategies, come up with a plan, have a vision to get the best result possible for our members. Two things. We're only as strong as the rank and file members that allow us to lead them over the next 5 years, and they're going to be vital. And as far as putting the power back politically, you know, often over the last decade or 15 years, you know, we've been giving politicians millions upon millions of dollars of our dues paying members, right? And in some factions and in some of these political, we have DRIVE, which is our political arm, where we raise money and give it out to politicians. But at the end of the day, it always comes out of our members' pockets somehow, some way, right? It's like there's got to be accountability. They have to understand that if we are helping finance a successful run or a campaign, that when it comes time to effectively trying to make change where it's easy to organize, where these employers are held accountable, where workers are respected, you know, that's where we're going to be able to influence our power politically. You see it right now with the Secretary of Labor coming out of Boston, Marty Walsh, who was a card-carrying labor out of Local 223, which is a strong union, but also was a state rep, was also a mayor in the city of Boston. You know, when you put the right people in office, like right now the Biden administration, first order of business was they fired the executive director or chief legal counsel for the NLRB, which was a strong sign that as a result of unions supporting this new administration, that there is going to be change. So that's how we influence our power. But the most important thing, not just for the Teamsters Union, but for the labor movement in general, and it's something we're doing with our campaign, it's something we're doing as a team, we've got to build bridges and coalitions, get in a room and come up with reasonable solutions for reasonable problems, so that we can have a united front. And it's not just if there's an issue with United Hair, if there's an issue with SEIU, if there's an issue with the building trade, regardless of whether it's our fight or not, that we have to engage in that fight, because today's fight may not be ours, but tomorrow's certainly will be. And we want that support that we would be given to everybody else. And it sends a strong message, you know. I mean, look, a lot of unions are dealing with, you know, a lot of social issues. A lot of unions are dealing with infrastructure issues. A lot of unions are just dealing with problems in general, and I think we just have to have a united front and check our egos at the door, get in a room, and figure out the strategy for the survival of the labor movement. And I think that's going to be vital. But the other part that's most important is listening to our rank and file members that have to go out to work every single day in these industries, no matter where you are or who you represent, and let the leaders bring those ideas to the forefront.
How does this translate into the new contract negotiations for UPS, which comes up in a couple of years? I know you're starting that fight now.
My discipline and my thought process has always been that once your contract is ratified, you start thinking about the next contract that day. And we've been thinking about what's important to our members. We've been thinking about what the strategy is going to be moving forward on how we leverage our position of strength, which is going to be first support of our members, but also we want to go to every negotiation, especially with UPS, which is probably going to be the second national negotiations we go into. DHL will be first. We want to make sure that we go to that table from a position of strength, not from a position of weakness. We've got the ability to dig into the financials. We've got the ability to leverage our relationships within the communities, within the businesses that they serve. So putting together an actual plan that's going to work. And again, you reference being a teamster, tough guy and girl, or you want to be a strategic, smart, tough teamster guy or gal. So, you know, that's going to be the difference in these negotiations. And look, UPS says that, you know, they're paying attention to this just like every other employer. They know that there's going to be demands made by us that hopefully, and in the event that we can get a deal, that a lot of those concessions from the last round of negotiations will be taken back by us, and then we can get on with it. If not, you know, worst case scenario, sometimes if employers aren't listening or they don't care, then you've got to put them on notice that, hey, you know what? The last resort is you've got a $300 million strike fund. Roll your dice because our members are stronger than ever and they're united. So that's going to be the thought process.
Sean O'Brien, Fred Zuckerman, Teamsters United campaign to win new leadership for the Brotherhood of Teamsters Union. Now, how can people find out more about the specifics of your campaign?
The Teamsters United O'Brien and Zuckerman 2021 Facebook sites, Twitter, and websites are all up and running, and they're active and they're updated almost on a moment's notice about where we are, what we're doing, what our agenda is, what our platform has been. The one thing, we came out of a convention where we were successful in getting a two-thirds rule eliminated, which is going to help in our fight with these employers when they claim that our members aren't involved and engaged. So, you know, that's going to be important. We actually leveraged our strength as a team to ensure that our members, when they go on strike, that they get paid from day one and they no longer have to wait 8 days to be paid. So some of the stuff that we've been, some of our platform that we've been preaching over the last 3 years had come to fruition coming out of the conventions. I will say this in closing. If our members give us the opportunity to lead this great organization, I can promise you we are going to be bigger, we're going to be faster, and we're going to be stronger under our leadership. So I thank you for the opportunity allowing me to be on this great show of yours.
We've been speaking with Sean O'Brien, candidate for the presidency of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.